To avoid interruption for turning the tape, the holy days will be presented in the following order: Nowruz, the Day of the Covenant, and Ascension of Abdu'l-Bahá, Tape 2, Side A. Martyrdom of the Bab and Ascension of Baha'u'llah, Tape 2, Side B.
Nowruz, presentation 19 minutes.
The following are a few facts and stories about the Baha'i New Year called Nowruz. It is correctly pronounced Nowruz, meaning New Day. The Bab originated the Baha'i calendar, also known as the Badi'i calendar. The year is identified by the initials B-E. For Baha'i era. The Bab named the first month Baha and also named the first day of each month Baha. Baha'u'llah reaffirmed the Bab's new calendar with one alteration. He placed the 4 or 5 days of intercalary days called Ayyamiha between the 18th and the 19th months. The beginning of the Baha'i calendar is the Nowruz of 1844 AD, about 2 months before the Bab's declaration. In other words, March 21, 1844 AD begins year one of the Baha'i era. Baha'u'llah has clearly stated that when the vernal equinox takes place, even if it is 1 minute before sunset, then that day is considered Nowruz and the fasting period has ended. The vernal equinox over time ranges from March 20th to March 22nd. Baha'u'llah has authorized the Universal House of Justice to work out the details of the calendar. The Universal House of Justice has stated that until it establishes a universal reference point for the calculation of the vernal equinox, the Baha'i Nowruz is to be celebrated from sunset of March 20th to sunset of March 21st. The traditional Persian custom of celebrating this ancient festival for 12 days and having a table decorated with symbolic items does not enter the Baha'i celebration. The Persian National Nowruz is a time for gift exchange, but Baha'u'llah designated Ayyamiha as the time for gift giving and charity. The following words of Baha'u'llah in the Most Holy Book will open our celebration of Nowruz.
Happy the one who entereth upon the first day of the month of Baha, the day which God hath consecrated to this great name. And blessed be he who evidenceth on this day the bounties that God hath bestowed upon him. He verily is of those who show forth thanks to God through action, betokening the Lord's munificence, which hath encompassed all the worlds. Say, this day, verily, is the crown of all the months and the source thereof, the day on which the breath of life is wafted over all created things. Great is the blessedness of him who greeteth it with radiance and joy. We testify that he is in truth among those who are blissful. End quote. In another passage, Baha'u'llah reveals, quote, O pen of the Most High, say, O people of the world, we have enjoined upon you fasting during a brief period, and at its close have designated for you no ruse as a feast. Thus hath the day star of utterance shone forth above the horizon of the book, as decreed by him who is the Lord of the beginning and the end.
Now a few stories from the lives of the Bab, Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha, about some very special Nowruz celebrations. Mullah Hussein, the first to believe in the Bab, accompanied by his servant, had walked nearly 900 miles, a good share of it in winter, to see his lord, the Bab, who was incarcerated in the fortress of Maku. Each chilly dawn signaled the beginning of a long day's march, but this day, close to the end of the journey, was different. It was the 20th of March, 1848. While Mullah Hussein's heart was flooded with the hope of celebrating Nowruz with the Blessed Bab, the pounding of his heart commanded a faster march. Soon it was light enough that at a distance he saw the grim castle in the heart of the heartless mountain, with a village at its base. The sun was rising when they saw the silhouette of a person standing near a bridge. As they got closer, their surprise ever increased because no one knew about their arrival. And besides, the person awaiting them was a well-dressed and impressive man. Mullah Hussein immediately figured out that he could be no one but the harsh warden Ali Khan, who had become subservient to the wishes of the Bab. But still, what was Ali Khan doing there that early in the morning, so fully dressed as if he were going to welcome the king? Their perplexity came to a sudden end when Ali Khan threw himself at the dusty feet of Mullah Hussein and spoke. Last night I had an inspiring dream. In my dream I was startled by the sudden message that Muhammad the Prophet was soon to arrive at Maku and directly go to the fortress to visit the Bab and offer his congratulations on the advent of Nowruz. With such a message, I ran out to meet him and at a distance from town saw two men walking towards me. I thought one was Muhammad and the other his companion. I bent to kiss the hem of his garment when I suddenly woke up. The vividness of that dream left no doubt that it was a true vision. Immediately I got up, did my ablution and prayer, put on my finest attire. It was before sunrise when I began to walk to the spot seen in my dream. Also, I instructed my stable master to saddle 3 of my best horses and follow me. The sun was just rising when I reached the bridge, and now I see the same 2 people in my dream walking towards me. Ali Khan later related, I threw myself on the feet of the one whom I thought was the Prophet and kissed his feet. I begged him and his companion to mount the horses which I had prepared for them, but the answer was no. I have vowed to accomplish the whole of my journey on foot. I will walk to the summit of this mountain, and there will visit your prisoner. Ali Khan accompanied them on foot, climbing towards the fortress. There, at the gate, was a sight to behold. The Bab was at the gate to receive Mullah Hussein with open arms. Then all the believers living nearby were summoned to celebrate that Nowruz in the presence of their Lord and the first man to believe in him. Truly, the events of that visit were breathtaking. The next story is from the time of Baha'u'llah. Nowruz of 1863 was a memorable festivity to which all the believers in Baghdad were invited. Each year after such a celebration in the delightful garden of Bashash near the house of Baha'u'llah and close to the river, all counted days and hours to the next Nowruz to spend nearly 2 weeks in the divine presence of Baha'u'llah. In this garden, with its murmuring streams, fragrant blossoms and songbirds, each year they would gather to welcome the new year in Persian custom. In advance, the tents were raised, and in the morning Baha'u'llah blessed the garden by his footsteps. It is very possible that Baha'u'llah handed a dish of candy to each of the participants as he had done on other occasions. In the first few days, the excitement of his presence blotted out any suspicion about the fast approaching events alluded to by him. In the afternoon of the fifth day of Nowruz, Baha'u'llah retired to his tent while the believers visited each other. After a while, Baha'u'llah emerged from his tent and asked his scribe to chant the tablet of the Holy Mariner, which had just been revealed. In the tablet, the ominous forecast of the calamities ahead changed everyone's ecstasy to gloom and despair. Immediately after it was chanted, Baha'u'llah ordered the tents to be folded for the last time and the companions to return to the city. The friends had not left yet, when a message came from the governor requesting to meet with Baha'u'llah. As we know, the governor was required to tell Baha'u'llah that an order from the capital had come banishing him from Baghdad. 1 month later, Baha'u'llah was at the Garden of Rizwan and declared his mission before leaving Baghdad forever. Now a few passages from a tablet written by Abdu'l-Bahá.
O ye children of the kingdom, it is New Year, that is to say, the rounding of the cycle of the year. A year is the expression of a cycle of the sun. But now is the beginning of a cycle of reality, a new cycle, a new age, a new century, a new time, and a new year. Therefore it is very blessed. I wish this blessing to appear and become manifest in the faces and characteristics of the believers, so that they, too, may become a new people. And having found new life and been baptized with fire and spirit, may make the world a new world, to the end that the old ideas depart and new thoughts come. Ancient politics, whose foundation is war, be discarded, and modern politics founded on peace raise the standards of victory. The new star shine and gleam, and the new sun illumine and radiate. I desire for you that you will have this great assistance and partake of this great bounty, and that in spirit and heart you will strive and endeavor until the world of war become the world of peace, the world of darkness, the world of light, satanic conduct be turned into heavenly behavior, the ruined places become built up, the sword be turned into the olive branch, all the nations of the world, one nation, all races as one race, and all national anthems harmonized into one melody.
The last story is about a special Nowruz in the life of Abdu'l-Bahá. After Abdu'l-Bahá's release from incarceration in the desolate prison city of Akka, he moved to Haifa never to set foot again in that city which had held him captive for 40 years. the downfall of the Sultan, the removal of restrictions and freedom for Abdu'l-Bahá to travel, brought great joy to everyone. Nowruz of 1909 was approaching. The completion of the Shrine of the Bab, in spite of many overwhelming obstacles, was reason to rejoice. Abdu'l-Bahá considered the building of the Shrine of the Bab his greatest accomplishment. Then, on that Nowruz of 1909, he laid with his own hands the sacred remains of the Blessed Bab and his companion martyr within the heart of Mount Carmel, protected by the shrine. That stated, every brick of it was laid with a labor of love, and every inch of it was raised with tears of agony. At the final moment, in that electrifying atmosphere, filled at once with tragedy and triumph, he took off his turban, shoes, and cloak, and laid his blessed head on the corner of that holy casket, and wept so intensely that everyone wept with him. That same night, a joyous telegram arrived bearing the news of the formation of the first Baha'i National Convention in Chicago. We will close with the Nowruz prayer by Baha'u'llah.
Praised be Thou, O my God, that Thou hast ordained Nowruz as a festival unto those who have observed the fast for love of Thee and abstained from all that is abhorrent unto Thee. Grant, O my Lord, that the fire of Thy love and the heat produced by the fast enjoined by Thee may inflame them in Thy cause and make them to be occupied with Thy praise and with remembrance of Thee. Since Thou hast adorned them, O my Lord, with the ornament of the fast prescribed by Thee, do Thou adorn them also with the ornament of Thine acceptance, through Thy grace and bountiful favor. For the doings of men are all dependent upon Thy good pleasure, and are conditioned by Thy behest. Shouldst Thou regard him who hath broken the fast as one who hath observed it, such a man would be reckoned among them who from eternity had been keeping the fast. And shouldst Thou decree that he who hath observed the fast hath broken it, that person would be numbered with such as have caused the robe of Thy revelation to be stained with dust and been far removed from the crystal waters of this living fountain. Thou art he through whom the ensign, praiseworthy art Thou in Thy works, hath been lifted up, and the standard, obeyed art Thou in Thy behest, hath been unfurled. Make known this, Thy station, O my God, unto Thy servants, that they may be made aware that the excellence of all things is dependent upon Thy bidding and Thy word, and the virtue of every act is conditioned by Thy leave and the good pleasure of Thy will, and may recognize that the reins of men's doings are within the grasp of Thine acceptance in Thy commandment. Make this known unto them, that nothing whatsoever may shut them out from Thy beauty in these days whereon the Christ exclaimeth, All dominion is Thine, O Thou the Begetter of the Spirit. And Thy friend crieth out, Glory be to Thee, O Thou the Best Beloved, for that Thou hast uncovered Thy beauty and written down for Thy chosen ones what will cause them to attain unto the seat of the revelation of Thy most great name, through which all the peoples have lamented except such as have detached themselves from all else except Thee, and set themselves towards Him who is the revealer of Thyself and the manifestation of Thine attributes. He who is Thy branch and all Thy company, O my Lord, have broken this day their fast, after having observed it within the precincts of Thy court and in their eagerness to please Thee. Do Thou ordain for him and for them and for all such as have entered Thy presence in those days all the good Thou didst destine in Thy book. Supply them then with that which will profit them in both this life and in the life beyond. Thou in truth art the all-knowing, the all-wise. The Day of the Covenant. Presentation, 7 minutes.
When some believers asked Abdu'l-Bahá if they could celebrate his birthday, he told them that because it falls on the declaration of the Bab, that day should be devoted only to the anniversary of the declaration. However, he designated November 26 as a day of the covenant to celebrate Baha'u'llah's appointment of the center of his covenant. The day of the covenant reminds us how blessed and fortunate we are for living in this day which, as prophesied, shall not be followed by night. The Bab stated that the day in the cycle of any religion is when the manifestation is living, and the night comes after his passing when luminaries guide the people. However, in religions of the past, such guidance failed to preserve the unity of the followers and integrity of the teachings and laws. Now that humanity is approaching maturity, it can understand and obey the covenant through which the cause of God is protected from all of the contentions and misfortunes of the past. Now a pen portrait of Abdu'l-Bahá given by Professor Edward G. Brown, the eminent Orientalist who met Abdu'l-Bahá in 1890, when he came to Akka for the purpose of attaining the presence of Baha'u'llah. The following is what he wrote about Abdu'l-Bahá, then 46 years old. Seldom have I seen one whose appearance impressed me more. A tall, strongly built man, holding himself straight as an arrow, with white turban and raiment, long black locks reaching almost to the shoulder, broad, powerful forehead indicating a strong intellect combined with an unswerving will, eyes keen as a hawk's and strongly marked but pleasing features. Such was my first impression of Abbas Effendi, the master, as he is called. Subsequent conversations with him served only to heighten the respect with which his appearance had from the first inspired me. One, more eloquent of speech, more apt of illustrations, more intimately acquainted with the sacred books of the Jews, the Christians, and the Mohammedans could scarcely be found. These qualities, combined with a bearing at once majestic and genial, made me cease to wonder at the influence and esteem which he enjoyed even beyond the circle of his father's followers. About the greatness of this man and his power, no one who had seen him could entertain a doubt. Baha'u'llah wrote in the Kitab-e Aqdas, quote, "When the ocean of my presence hath ebbed, and the book of my revelation is ended, turn your faces towards him whom God had purposed, who had branched from this ancient root." End quote. Later in the Book of His Covenant, referring to this verse, Baha'u'llah explicitly states, quote, "The object of this sacred verse is none other except the Most Mighty Branch." End quote. Abdu'l-Bahá was known as the Most Mighty Branch or the Most Great Branch. A passage from the Tablet of the Branch revealed by Baha'u'llah in Adrianople 25 years before his passing, will be recited.
"Well is it with him that hath sought his shelter and abideth beneath his shadow. Verily the limb of the law of God hath sprung forth from this root, which God hath firmly implanted in the ground of his will, and whose branch hath been so uplifted as to encompass the whole of creation. Render thanks unto God, O people, for his appearance. For verily he is the most great favor unto you, the most perfect bounty upon you. And through him every moldering bone is quickened. Whoso turneth towards him hath turned towards God. And whoso turneth away from him hath turned away from my beauty.
According to the writings of Shoghi Effendi, the words of Abdu'l-Bahá do not have the same rank as the words of Baha'u'llah, but have the same validity. In the World Order of Baha'u'llah, Shoghi Effendi states, quote, "Exalted as is the rank of Abdu'l-Bahá, and how profuse the praises with which Baha'u'llah has glorified his son, so unique a distinction must never be construed as conferring upon its recipient a station identical with or equivalent to that of his father, the manifestation himself." End quote. May we all be worthy of such gift from Baha'u'llah, his covenant, and his center, Abdu'l-Bahá. We need to pray for firmness in the covenant, which is not only belief in the infallibility of the authorized successorship, but also obedience to them. We will close with this prayer from Abdu'l-Bahá.
O God, my God, shield thy trusted servants from the evils of self and passion. Protect them with the watchful eye of thy loving kindness from all rancor, hate, and envy. Shelter them in the impregnable stronghold of thy care, and safe from the darts of doubtfulness, make them the manifestations of thy glorious signs. Illumine their faces with the effulgent rays shed from the dayspring of thy divine unity. Gladden their hearts with the verses revealed from thy holy kingdom. Strengthen their loins by thine all-swaying power that cometh from thy realm of glory. Thou art the All-Bountiful, the Protector, the Almighty, the Gracious. Ascension of Abdu'l-Bahá. Presentation, 10 minutes.
The mission of Abdu'l-Bahá was fast approaching its end. His allusions about the nearness of the hour mostly fell on deaf ears because life without Abdu'l-Bahá was unthinkable. Here are the words of Shoghi Effendi on the passing of Abdu'l-Bahá. Abdu'l-Bahá's great work was now ended. The historic mission with which his father had 29 years previously invested him had been gloriously consummated. Several years before he had thus alluded to his passing in these words. O ye my faithful loved ones, should at any time afflicting events come to pass in the Holy Land, never feel disturbed or agitated. Fear not, neither grieve, for whatsoever thing happeneth will cause the word of God to be exalted. Remember, whether or not I be on earth, my presence will be with you always. In a tablet addressed to the American believers a few days before he passed away, he thus voiced his pent-up longing to depart from this world by stating, "I have renounced the world and the people thereof. In the cage of this world I flutter even as a frightened bird, and yearn every day to to take my flight unto thy kingdom. Ya Baha'u'l-Abha, make me drink of the cup of sacrifice and set me free. Through the dreams he dreamed, through the conversations he held, through the tablet he revealed, it became increasingly evident that his end was fast approaching. Whilst occupying a solitary room in the garden of his house, he recounted another dream to those around him. "I dreamed a dream," he said, "and behold, the Blessed Beauty came and said to me, 'Destroy this room.'" A month before his death, which occurred in the early hours of November 28, 1921, he had referred expressly to it. And about 2 weeks before his passing, he had spoken to his faithful gardener in a manner that clearly indicated he knew his end to be nigh. "I am so fatigued," he observed to him. "The hour is come when I must leave everything and take my flight. I am too weary to walk." Till the very last day of his earthly life, Abdu'l-Baha continued to shower that same love upon high and low alike. On that Friday before his passing, despite great fatigue, he attended the noonday prayer at the mosque and distributed afterwards alms, as was his custom, among the poor, dictated some tablets, the last ones he revealed, blessed the marriage of a trusted servant, which he had insisted should take place that day, felt feverish the next day, and being unable to leave the house on the following Sunday, sent all the believers to the tomb of the Bab to attend the feast on the occasion of the anniversary of the Declaration of the Covenant. Received with his unfailing courtesy and kindness, that same afternoon, the Mufti of Haifa, the mayor, and the head of the police, and inquired at night, the last of his life, after the health of every member of his household, of the pilgrims and the friends in Haifa.
Now we go to a narrative written by Shoghi Effendi in Lady Blomfield called The Passing of Abdu'l-Baha. At 8 in the evening, he retired to bed after taking a little nourishment, saying, "I am quite well." He told the family to go to bed and rest. Two of his daughters, however, stayed with him. That night, the master had gone to sleep very calmly, quite free from fever. He awoke about 1:15 a.m., got up and walked across to a table where he drank some water. He took off an outer garment, saying, "I am too warm." He went back to bed, and when his daughter, Ruha Khanom, later on approached, she found him lying peacefully, and as he looked into her face, he asked her to lift up the net curtains, saying, "I have difficulty in breathing. Give me more air." Some rose water was brought, of which he drank, sitting up in bed to do so without any help. He again laid down, and as some food was offered him, he remarked in a clear and distinct voice, "You wish me to take some food, and I am going." He gave them a beautiful look. His face was so calm, his expression so serene, they thought him asleep. The eyes that had always looked out with loving kindness upon humanity, whether friends or foes, were now closed. The hands that had ever been stretched forth to give alms to the poor and the needy had now finished their labor. The feet that with untiring zeal had gone upon the ceaseless errands of the Lord of Compassion were now at rest. The lips that had so eloquently championed the cause of the suffering sons of men were now hushed in silence. His glorious spirit had passed from the life of earth, from the persecutions of the enemies of righteousness, from the storm and stress of well-nigh 80 years of indefatigable toil for the good of others. End quote. Balyuzi writes, "Sorrow and anguish were most intense, but decisions had to be taken, preparations had to be made. First of all, where was to be the resting place of the earthly remains of Abdu'l-Bahá? It was remembered that there was another vault next to the vault where the remains of the Bab lay. The greatest holy leaf, Abdu'l-Bahá's sister, decided that Abdu'l-Bahá's tomb should be there. The funeral of Abdu'l-Bahá was indeed a funeral the like of which the Holy Land had never witnessed. End quote.
In the words of Shoghi Effendi and Lady Bloomfield, the High Commissioner of Palestine, Sir Herbert Samuel, the Governor of Jerusalem, the Governor of Phoenicia, the chief officials of the government, the consuls of various countries resident in Haifa, the head of various religious communities, all about 10,000 in number, mourning the loss of their beloved one. The sacred coffin was upraised on the shoulders of loved ones. Immediately behind it came the members of his family. Next to them walked the officials. The casket appeared in a distance to be borne aloft by invisible hands, so high above the heads of the people was it carried. After 2 hours' walking, they reached the garden of the tomb of the Bab. Tenderly was the sacred coffin placed upon a plain table, covered with a fair white tablecloth. After the funeral orations were delivered, the High Commissioner stepped forth to perform his act of homage, and other officials followed him. Then came the moment when the casket passed slowly into its simple, hallowed resting place. The will and testament of Abdu'l-Bahá entrusted to the care of the greatest holy leaf, Abdu'l-Bahá's sister, was in a sealed envelope addressed to Shoghi Effendi. Its contents could not be made known until Shoghi Effendi reached Haifa. He was at Oxford in England when Abdu'l-Bahá passed away. After his arrival on January 3, 1922, the will was read to the senior males of the household and 4 days later to all the believers there. Then, on January 16, the greatest holy leaf sent the following cable to the Baha'is of the world. In will, Shoghi Effendi appointed guardian of cause and head of House of Justice. Some years before his passing, Abdu'l-Bahá had written a prayer with this preface: "Whoso reciteth this prayer with lowliness and fervor will bring gladness and joy to the heart of this servant. It will be even as meeting him face to face."
He is the All-Glorious. O God, my God, lowly and tearful, I raise my suppliant hands to Thee, and cover my face in the dust of that threshold of Thine. Exalted above the knowledge of the learned and the praise of all that glorify Thee, graciously look upon Thy servant, humble and lowly at Thy door, with the glances of the eye of Thy mercy, and immerse him in the ocean of Thine eternal grace. Lord, he is a poor and lowly servant of Thine, enthralled and imploring Thee, trusting in Thee, in tears before Thy face, calling to Thee and beseeching Thee, saying, O Lord my God, give me Thy grace to serve Thy loved ones. Strengthen me in my servitude to Thee. Illumine my brow with the light of adoration in Thy court of holiness and of prayer to Thy kingdom of grandeur. Help me to be selfless at the heavenly entrance of Thy gate, and aid me to be detached from all things within Thy holy precincts. Lord, give me to drink from the chalice of selflessness. With its robe, clothe me, and in its ocean, immerse me. Make me as dust in the pathway of thy loved ones, and grant that I may offer up my soul for the earth, ennobled by the footsteps of thy chosen ones in thy path, O Lord of glory in the highest. With this prayer doth thy servant call thee, at dawn tide and in the night season. Fulfill his heart's desire, O Lord. Illumine his heart, gladden his bosom, kindle his light, that he may serve thy cause and thy servants. Thou art the bestower, the pitiful, the most bountiful, the gracious, the merciful, the compassionate. Martyrdom of the Bab. Presentation, 19 minutes.
How eagerly the Bab yearned to be a sacrifice in the path of Baha'u'llah. In a passage he states,
"Fear not, I am come into this world to bear witness to the glory of sacrifice. The drops of this consecrated blood will be the seed out of which will arise the mighty tree of God, the tree that will gather beneath its all-embracing shadow the peoples and kindreds of earth." End quote. Obviously, the tree refers to the revelation of Baha'u'llah.
The following graphic account of the martyrdom of the Bab in the city of Tabriz on that July 9, 1850, is best told by Nabil in his immortal narrative, The Dawnbreakers. Deprived of his turban and sash, the twin emblems of his noble lineage, the Bab, together with Sayyid Hussein, his amanuensis, was driven to yet another confinement, which he well knew was but a step further on the way leading him to the goal he had set himself to attain. That day witnessed a tremendous commotion in the city of Tabriz. The great convulsion associated in the ideas of its inhabitants with the day of judgment seemed at last to have come upon them. Never had the city experienced a turmoil so fierce and so mysterious as the one which seized its inhabitants on that day the Bab was led to that place which was to be the scene of his martyrdom. As he approached the courtyard of the barracks, a youth suddenly leaped forward who, in his eagerness to overtake him, had forced his way through the crowd, utterly ignoring the risks and perils which such an attempt might involve. His face was haggard, his feet were bare, and his hair disheveled. Breathless with excitement and exhausted with fatigue, he flung himself at the feet of the Bab and, seizing the hem of his garment, passionately implored him, "Send me not from thee, O Master. Wherever thou goest, suffer me to follow thee." "Muhammad Ali," answered the Bab, "arise and rest assured that you will be with me. Tomorrow you shall witness what God has decreed." Two other companions, unable to contain themselves, rushed forward and assured him of their unalterable loyalty. These, together with Muhammad Ali Zanuzi, were seized and placed in the same cell in which the Bab and Sayyid Hussein were confined. I have heard Sayyid Hussein bear witness to the following. That night, the face of the Bab was aglow with joy, a joy such as had never shone from his countenance. Indifferent to the storm that raged about him, he conversed with us with gaiety and cheerfulness. The sorrows that had weighed so heavily upon him seemed to have completely vanished. Their weight appeared to have dissolved in the consciousness of approaching victory. "Tomorrow," he said to us, "will be the day of my martyrdom. Would that one of you might now arise and with his own hands end my life. I prefer to be slain by the hand of a friend rather than by that of the enemy." Tears rained from our eyes as we heard him express that wish. We shrank, however, at the thought of taking away with our own hands so precious a life. We refused and remained silent. Muhammad Ali suddenly sprang to his feet and announced himself ready to obey whatever the Bab might desire. "This same youth who has risen to comply with my wish," the Bab declared, "will together with me suffer martyrdom. Him will I choose to share with me its crown." Early in the morning, Mirza Hasan Khan ordered his Farashbashi to conduct the Bab into the presence of the leading mujtahids of the city and to obtain from them the authorization required for his execution. As the Bab was leaving the barracks, Sayyid Hussein asked him what he should do. "Confess not your faith," he advised him. "Thereby you will be enabled, when the hour comes, to convey to those who are destined to hear you the things of which you alone are aware." He was engaged in confidential conversation with him when the Farashbashi suddenly interrupted and, holding Sayyid Hussein by the hand, drew him aside and severely rebuked him. "Not until I have said to him all those things that I wish to say," the Bab warned the Farashbashi, "can any earthly power silence me. Though all the world be armed against me, yet shall they be powerless to deter me from fulfilling to the last word my intention." The Farashbashi was amazed at such a bold assertion. When Muhammad Ali was ushered into the presence of the mujtahids, he was repeatedly urged in view of the position which his stepfather Sayyid Ali Zanuzi occupied to recant his faith. "Never," he exclaimed, "will I renounce my master. He is of the essence of my faith and the object of my truest adoration. In him I have found my paradise, and in the observance of his laws I recognize the ark of my salvation." "Hold your peace," thundered Mullah Muhammad Mamaghani, before whom that youth was brought. "Such words betray your madness. I can well excuse the words for which you are not responsible." "I am not mad," he retorted. "Such a charge should rather be brought against you, who have sentenced to death a man no less holy than the promised Qa'im. He is not a fool who has embraced his faith and is longing to shed his blood in his path." The Bab was in his turn brought before Mullah Muhammad Mamaghani, who, as soon as he had recognized him, seized the death warrant he had previously written, and handing it to his attendant, bade him deliver it to Farrash Bashi. "No need," he cried, "to bring the Sayyid Bab into my presence. This death warrant I penned the very day I met him at the gathering presided over by the Crown Prince. He surely is the same man whom I saw on that occasion, and has not, in the meantime, surrendered any of his claims." From thence, the Bab was conducted to the house of Mirza Baghir. When they arrived, they found his attendant standing at the gate and holding in his hand the Bab's death warrant. "No need to enter," he told them. Mullah Murtaza Ghuli, following in the footsteps of the other two mujtahids, had previously issued his own written testimony and refused to meet face to face his dreaded opponent. No sooner had the Farrash Bashi secured the necessary documents than he delivered his captive into the hands of Sam Khan, assuring him that he could proceed with his task now that he had obtained the sanction of the civil and ecclesiastical authorities of the realm. Sayyid Hussein had remained confined in the same room in which he had spent the previous night with the Bab. They were proceeding to place Muhammad Ali in that same room when he burst forth into tears and entreated them to allow him to remain with his master. He was delivered into the hands of Sam Khan, who was ordered to execute him also if he persisted in his refusal to deny his faith.
Sam Khan was in the meantime, finding himself increasingly affected by the behavior of his captive and the treatment that had been meted out to him. He was seized with great fear lest his action should bring upon him the wrath of God. "I profess the Christian faith," he explained to the Bab, "and entertain no ill will against you. If your cause be the cause of truth, enable me to free myself from the obligation to shed your blood." "Follow your instructions," the Bab replied. "And if your intention be sincere, the Almighty is surely able to relieve you from your perplexity." Sam Khan ordered his men to drive a nail into the pillar, and to make fast two ropes to that nail, from which the Bab and his companion were to be separately suspended. Muhammad Ali begged Sam Khan to be placed in such a manner that his own body would shield that of the Bab. He was eventually suspended in such a position that his head reposed on the breast of his master. As soon as they were fastened, a regiment of soldiers ranged itself in three files, each of 250 men, each of which was ordered to open fire in its turn, until the whole detachment had discharged the volleys of its bullets. The smoke of the firing of the 750 rifles was such as to turn the light of the noonday sun into darkness. There had crowded on the roof of the barracks, as well as the tops of the adjoining houses, about 10,000 people, all of whom were witnesses to that sad and moving scene. As soon as the cloud of smoke had cleared away, an astounded multitude were looking upon a scene which their eyes could scarcely believe. There, standing before them alive and unhurt, was the companion of the Bab, whilst he himself had vanished, uninjured from their sight. Though the cords with which they were suspended had been rent in pieces by the bullets, yet their bodies had miraculously escaped the volleys. Even the tunic which Muhammad Ali was wearing had, despite the thickness of the smoke, remained unsullied. "The Sayyidi Bab has gone from our sight," rang out the voices of the bewildered multitude. They set out in a frenzied search for him, and found him eventually, seated in the same room which he had occupied the night before, engaged in completing his interrupted conversation with Sayyid Hossein. An expression of unruffled calm was upon his face. His body had emerged unscathed from the shower of bullets which the regiment had directed against him. "I have finished my conversation with Sayyid Hossein," the Bab told the Farash Bashi. "Now you may proceed to fulfill your intention." The man was too much shaken to resume what he had already attempted. Refusing to accomplish his duty, he that same moment left that scene and resigned his post. Sam Khan was likewise stunned by the force of this tremendous revelation. He ordered his men to leave the barracks immediately and refused ever again to associate himself and his regiment with any act that involved the least injury to the Bab. He swore, as he left that courtyard, never again to resume that task, even though his refusal should entail the loss of his own life.
No sooner had Sam Khan departed than Agha Jan Khan Khamse volunteered to carry out the order for execution. On the same wall, and in the same manner, the Bab and his companion were again suspended, while the regiment formed in line to open fire upon them. The last words of the Bab to the gazing multitude were, "Had you believed in me, O wayward generation, every one of you would have followed the example of this youth, who stood in rank above most of you, and willingly would have sacrificed himself in my path. The day will come when you will have recognized me. That day I shall have ceased to be with you." The very moment the shots were fired, a gale of exceptional severity arose and swept over the whole city. A whirlwind of dust of incredible density obscured the light of the sun and blinded the eyes of the people. The entire city remained enveloped in that darkness from noon till night. As for the people of Tabriz, their witnessing the failure of the first regiment to injure the Bab, and the dust storm darkening the city did not induce them to pause and reflect upon the significance of such momentous events. Blinded they were, and blinded they remain. The account in the Dawnbreakers continues. On the evening of that same day, the mangled bodies of the Bab and his companion were removed from the courtyard of the barracks to the edge of the moat outside the gate of the city. Four companies, each consisting of 10 sentinels, were ordered to keep watch in turn over them. On the morning following the day of martyrdom, the Russian consul in Tabriz, accompanied by an artist, went to that spot and ordered that a sketch be made of the remains as they lay beside the moat. It was such a faithful portrait of the Bab that I looked upon. No bullet had struck his forehead, his cheeks, or his lips. I gazed upon a smile which seemed to be still lingering upon his countenance. His body, however, had been severely mutilated. I could recognize the arms and head of his companion, who seemed to be holding him in his embrace. As I gazed horror-struck upon that haunting picture, my heart sank within me. I turned away my face in anguish, and regaining my house, locked myself within my room. For 3 days and three nights, I could neither sleep nor eat, so overwhelmed I was with emotion. That short and tumultuous life, with all its sorrows, its turmoils, its banishment, and eventually the awe-inspiring martyrdom with which it had been crowned, seemed again to be reenacted before my eyes. The Guardian, in his book God Passes By, completes the picture. In the middle of the following night, a follower of the Bab, Haji Suleiman Khan, succeeded in removing the bodies to the silk factory owned by one of the believers of Milan, and laid them in a wooden casket, which he later transferred to a place of safety. Under the direction of Baha'u'llah, the remains were first moved to Tehran and, for nearly 50 years, kept in hiding places. Finally, by the instruction of Abdu'l-Bahá, the remains of the Bab and his martyred companion were transferred to the Holy Land. In 1909, the sacred remains permanently and ceremoniously laid to rest by him in a specially erected mausoleum on the slopes of Mount Carmel. The Guardian continues, "Thus ended a life which posterity will recognize as standing at the confluence of two universal prophetic cycles, the Adamic cycle, stretching back as far as the first dawnings of the world recorded religious history, and the Baha'i cycle destined to propel itself across the unborn reaches of time for a period of no less than 5,000 centuries. So momentous an event could hardly fail to arouse widespread and keen interest even beyond the confines of the land in which it had occurred. Many persons from all parts of the world, is Abdu'l-Bahá's written assertion, set out for Persia and began to investigate wholeheartedly the matter. In countries as remote as those of Western Europe, an interest no less profound was kindled and spread with great rapidity to literary, artistic, diplomatic, and intellectual circles. Nowhere in the whole compass of world religious literature, except in the Gospels, do we find any record relating to the death of any of the religion founders of the past comparable to the martyrdom suffered by the Prophet of Shiraz. The passion of Jesus Christ, and indeed his whole public ministry, alone offer a parallel to the mission and death of the Bab. All those involved in the killing of the Bab sooner or later met their dire and fatal consequences, details of which are found in the Guardian's writings. The following words of Baha'u'llah judges those who opposed, persecuted, and in the end cruelly martyred the Bab. Quote, "The more he exhorted them, the fiercer grew their enmity, till at last they put him to death with shameful cruelty. The curse of God be upon the oppressors." End quote.
We will close with the Tablet of Visitation. The praise which hath dawned from thy most august self, and the glory which hath shone forth from thy most effulgent beauty rest upon thee, O thou who art the manifestation of grandeur, and the King of eternity, and the Lord of all who are in heaven and on earth. I testify that through thee the sovereignty of God in his dominion and the majesty of God in his grandeur were revealed, and the day stars of ancient splendor have shed their radiance in the heaven of thine irrevocable decree, and the beauty of the unseen hath shone forth above the horizon of creation. I testify, moreover, that with but a movement of thy pen, thine injunction, Be thou, hath been enforced, and God's hidden secret hath been divulged, and all created things have been called into being, and all the revelations have been sent down. I bear witness, moreover, that through thy beauty, the beauty of the adored one hath been unveiled, and through thy face, the face of the desired one hath shone forth, and that through a word from thee thou hast decided between all created things, causing them who are devoted to thee to ascend unto the summit of glory, and the infidels to fall into the lowest abyss. I bear witness that he who hath known thee hath known God, and he who hath attained unto thy presence hath attained unto the presence of God. Great, therefore, is the blessedness of him who hath believed in thee and in thy signs, and hath humbled himself before thy sovereignty, and hath been honored with meeting thee, and hath attained the good pleasure of thy will, and circled round thee, and stood before thy throne. Woe betide him that hath transgressed against thee, and hath denied thee, and repudiated thy signs, and gainsaid thy sovereignty, and risen up against thee, and waxed proud before thy face, and hath disputed thy testimonies, and fled from thy rule and thy dominion, and been numbered with the infidels whose names have been inscribed by the fingers of thy behest upon thy holy tablets. Waft then unto me, O my God and my beloved, from the right hand of thy mercy and thy loving kindness, the holy breaths of thy favors, that they may draw me away from myself and from the world unto the courts of thy nearness and thy presence. Potent art thou to do what pleaseth thee. Thou truly hast been supreme over all things. The remembrance of God and his praise and the glory of God and his splendor rest upon thee, O thou who art his beauty. I bear witness that the eye of creation hath never gazed upon one wronged like thee. Thou wast immersed all the days of thy life beneath an ocean of tribulations. At one time thou wast in chains and fetters, at another thou wast threatened by the sword of thine enemies. Yet despite all this, thou didst enjoin upon all men to observe what had been prescribed unto thee by him who is the all-knowing, the all-wise. May my spirit be a sacrifice to the wrongs thou didst suffer, and my soul be a ransom for the adversities thou didst sustain. I beseech God by thee, and by them whose faces have been illumined with the splendors of the light of thy countenance, and who for love of thee have observed all whereunto they were bidden, to remove the veils that have come in between thee and thy creatures, and to supply me with the good of this world and the world to come. Thou art in truth the Almighty, the Most Exalted, the All-Glorious, the Ever-Forgiving, the Most Compassionate. Bless thou, O Lord my God, the divine lote tree and its leaves, and its boughs and its branches, and its stems and its offshoots, as long as thy most excellent titles will endure, and thy most august attributes will last. Protect it then from the mischief of the aggressor and the hosts of tyranny. Thou art in truth the Almighty, the Most Powerful. Bless thou also, O Lord my God, thy servants and thy handmaidens who have attained unto thee. Thou truly art the All-Bountiful, whose grace is infinite. No God is there save thee, the Ever-Forgiving, the Most Generous. Ascension of Baha'u'llah, presentation, 8 minutes.
"The sun of Baha'u has set," was the opening line of a telegram which on May 29, 1892, Abdul Baha sent to the Sultan of Turkey, and also informed him that he intended to inter the sacred remains near the mansion of Bahji. Baha'u'llah's counsels and assurances could be found in many passages of his writings, such as,
"Let not your hearts be perturbed, O people, when the glory of my presence is withdrawn and the ocean of my utterance is stilled. In my presence amongst you there is a wisdom, and in my absence there is yet another, inscrutable to all but God, the incomparable, the all-knowing. Verily, we behold you from our realm of glory, and shall aid whosoever will arise for the triumph of our cause with hosts of the concourse on high and a company of our favored angels."
About 9 months before his passing, Baha'u'llah, as attested by Abdul Baha, had voiced his desire to depart from this world. Thereafter, from the tone of his remarks, it became increasingly evident that the end of his earthly life was approaching. But he avoided mentioning it openly. On May 8, 1892, 3 weeks before his ascension, he contracted a slight fever, which got worse by the next day, but soon after subsided. He continued to permit visits by certain friends and pilgrims, but soon it became evident that he was not well. Abdul Baha, who with his family lived within the walled city of Akka, went to stay in the mansion of Bahji so he could personally attend his father in his last days. Baha'u'llah's general condition steadily grew worse. In his room there were two cases in which Baha'u'llah used to keep his writings and seals whenever he went away from the mansion. One day Baha'u'llah told his beloved son to gather all papers and place them in the cases. On hearing this, Abdul Baha became grief-stricken, recognizing that the last hours were near. Distraught with sadness, he hesitatingly and slowly moved to comply. Baha'u'llah, for the second time, instructed him to finish the task. A cousin of Abdul Baha, who later proved treacherous, entered Baha'u'llah's room. With his help, Abdul Baha placed everything in the cases. When finished, Baha'u'llah told Abdul Baha in front of the cousin that from now on those two cases belonged to Abdul Baha. However, they were stolen by the faithless ones. 6 days before his passing, he summoned to his presence the entire company of believers for what proved to be their last audience with him. As he lay in bed leaning against one of his sons, gently and affectionately he addressed the weeping crowd with these words, "I am well pleased with you all. You have rendered many services and been very assiduous in your labors. You have come here every morning and evening. May God assist you to remain united. May He aid you to exalt the cause of God, the Lord of Being." Then he spoke to the women with loving words of encouragement and assured them that Abdul Baha had the document which entrusted them to his care. It was in the very early morning of May 29, 1892, 8 hours after sunset, in the 75th year of his life, that the spirit of the Blessed Beauty winged its flight to the realm of glory. Abdul Baha, assisted by younger half-brother, washed his sacred body in preparation for interment. How agonizing for Abdul Baha to see the scars from awful chains upon his blessed body, testifying to the depth of persecution he endured for the redemption of mankind. The interment took place the same day, shortly after sunset, in a building near the mansion where he spent the last 12 years of his life. His resting place, known as the Shrine of Baha'u'llah, is the Qibla, or the point of adoration for all the Baha'is to turn to during the obligatory prayers. For a full week, a vast number of mourners of all classes, creeds, and nationalities poured in along with countless letters of condolence from far and near. Baha'u'llah's will and testament, called by him the Book of My Covenant, which had been kept in a sealed envelope and entrusted to Abdu'l-Bahá, was opened the ninth day after the ascension. The contents left no doubt about the appointment of Abdu'l-Bahá as his successor and the center of his covenant. The inconsolable Nabil, the great historian, who had followed Baha'u'llah from Baghdad days and had the privilege of a private audience with him during his last days, could not bear the burden of separation. Abdu'l-Bahá had chosen him to select passages from the writings of Baha'u'llah to compose the Tablet of Visitation. After he accomplished this, he drowned himself in the sea. The Guardian wrote that, with the ascension of Baha'u'llah draws to a close, a period which in many ways is unparalleled in the world's religious history. God's newborn faith had been fully and unreservedly proclaimed. The prophecies announcing its advent had been remarkably fulfilled. Its fundamental laws and cardinal principles, the warp and woof of the fabric of its future world order, had been clearly enunciated. The covenant designed to safeguard the unity and integrity of its world-embracing system had been irrevocably bequeathed to posterity.
We will close with the Tablet of Visitation. The praise which hath dawned from thy most august self, and the glory which hath shone forth from thy most effulgent beauty, rest upon thee, O thou who art the manifestation of grandeur, and the King of eternity, and the Lord of all who are in heaven and on earth. I testify that through thee the sovereignty of God in his dominion and the majesty of God in his grandeur were revealed, and the day stars of ancient splendor have shed their radiance in the heaven of thine irrevocable decree, and the beauty of the unseen hath shone forth above the horizon of creation. I testify, moreover, that with but a movement of thy pen, thine injunction, Be Thou, hath been enforced, and God's hidden secret hath been divulged, and all created things have been called into being, and all the revelations have been sent down. I bear witness, moreover, that through thy beauty, the beauty of the Adored One hath been unveiled, and through thy face, the face of the Desired One hath shone forth, and that through a word from thee thou hast decided between all created things, causing them who are devoted to thee to ascend unto the summit of glory, and the infidels to fall into the lowest abyss. I bear witness that he who hath known thee hath known God, and he who hath attained unto thy presence hath attained unto the presence of God. Great, therefore, is the blessedness of him who hath believed in thee and in thy signs, and hath humbled himself before thy sovereignty, and hath been honored with meeting thee, and hath attained the good pleasure of thy will, and circled round thee, and stood before thy throne. Woe betide him that hath transgressed against thee, and hath denied thee, and repudiated thy signs, and gainsaid thy sovereignty, and risen up against thee, and waxed proud before thy face, and hath disputed thy testimonies, and fled from thy rule and thy dominion, and been numbered with the infidels whose names have been inscribed by the fingers of thy behest upon thy holy tablets. Waft then unto me, O my God and my beloved, from the right hand of thy mercy and thy loving kindness, the holy breaths of thy favors, that they may draw me away from myself and from the world unto the courts of thy nearness and thy presence. Potent art thou to do what pleaseth thee. Thou truly hast been supreme over all things. The remembrance of God and his praise and the glory of God and his splendor rest upon thee, O thou who art his beauty. I bear witness that the eye of creation hath never gazed upon one wronged like thee. Thou wast immersed all the days of thy life beneath an ocean of tribulations. At one time thou wast in chains and fetters. At another thou wast threatened by the sword of thine enemies. Yet despite all this, thou didst enjoin upon all men to observe what had been prescribed unto thee by him who is the all-knowing, the all-wise. May my spirit be a sacrifice to the wrongs thou didst suffer, and my soul be a ransom for the adversities thou didst sustain. I beseech God by thee, and by them whose faces have been illumined with the splendors of the light of thy countenance, and who for love of thee have observed all whereunto they were bidden, to remove the veils that have come in between thee and thy creatures, and to supply me with the good of this world and the world to come. Thou art in truth the Almighty, the Most Exalted, the All-Glorious, the Ever-Forgiving, the Most Compassionate. Bless thou, O Lord my God, the divine lote tree and its leaves, and its boughs and its branches, and its stems and its offshoots, as long as thy most excellent titles will endure, and thy most august attributes will last. Protect it then from the mischief of the aggressor and the hosts of tyranny. Thou art in truth the Almighty, the Most Powerful. Bless thou also, O Lord my God, thy servants and thy handmaidens who have attained unto thee. Thou truly art the All-Bountiful, whose grace is infinite. No God is there save thee, the Ever-Forgiving, the Most Generous.